Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. My answers are posted every week on Mondays, and you can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask me, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. What is the word on your latest book, The Dim Hypothesis? Well, it's going as scheduled. It will be in the bookstores in September. And step by step, it's getting closer and closer to being actually produced. The jacket copy, the jacket graphics and appearance have now been decided on. The index is being completed. I have a very nice editor with whom I'm getting along famously at the publishing house at Penguin. And the only stages left are copy editing, you know, the standard for capitalization and hyphens and things like that, and then the final proofreading for typographical errors. And there's no question that it will be out in September. Do you distinguish official objectivist doctrine from Ayn Rand's personal views? Well, philosophy is broad principles about the nature of the universe, the means of knowledge, the nature of man, and then the value doctrines that all that leads to. All this is interconnected. In a proper philosophy, it's one system, as in objectivism. Now, that does not mean that every specific application of that philosophy is inherent in the philosophy. A philosopher can hold views that do not necessarily follow from the philosophy, but are its application to a realm where facts are established by science or observation or some other appropriate means. Philosophy is wide abstractions. That does not entail specific choices or specific interpretations of how they apply to concrete. For instance, take my theory of history presented in the Dim book. I make a definite distinction between official objectivist doctrine and Peikoff's theory of history. Now, I believe that my theory is based on objectivism, but it does not follow from objectivism. It is not, therefore, objectivism as such. It is my application, and each person has to decide, is this a correct application or not? It's not subjective, but it's still not a question of what is the philosophy, but what is its applications. And in that regard, Ayn Rand and I and others can disagree without anybody contradicting the philosophy. Remember also that there are personal options in applying broad philosophic principles. You can say that, for instance, sex is good is a philosophic principle, but that does not necessitate any special particular position or clothing, etc. It does specify that the general principles of morality apply, such as fraud, force, evasion, etc. But as apart from that, there are many different interpretations and complete options which would be personal, not official. So yes, but without that implying a contradiction or a subjective viewpoint. Is the ending of E.T. malevolent universe? Malevolent universe is the name Ayn Rand gave to the view that man is doomed, that it's impossible for him to achieve his values on Earth. And the questioner goes on, E.T. is one of my favorite movies. I always feel a very strong emotion in the end when E.T. has to leave the boy, but I'm not sure it's a healthy one. Well, I don't see anything at all wrong with that. I certainly did feel a similar emotion. It's really a love story. It's a love story between children, but presented as a mixture of children and independence and a certain degree of maturity, so you take it seriously. And it's not malevolent in the sense that E.T. does get his value. All the way through, he says, E.T., what is it, go home or call home? And he wants to go home. And we know from the very beginning that this is necessarily limited because he's an alien. It's impossible for him physically to leave him. So it is painful if you sympathize with the love story, but it's understandable. It's not a tragedy inherent in the nature of the universe. So I would not say there's anything wrong or anything malevolent about responding to that. Sometimes when dealing with people who are otherwise pleasant, I get angry because I concretize how their ideas are destroying people's lives. But I see you and other objectivists dealing cordially with people who advocate horrible things. How do you do it? Well, the first important thing is that you are able to delimit a person. So someone can hold some views with which you disagree, even some corrupt views, but nevertheless, in some part of their functioning, be a value to you, if you can make that distinction and you can deal with them in regard to the value element and not the other element, as long as you don't evade the existence of the other, then you are not sanctioning the existence of the other. An example would be if you have a math teacher who is great as a teacher, knows the subject, makes it extremely interesting, but is a mystic outside of class and thinks that numbers are in another dimension. You can certainly deal with him without being upset by his mysticism, because that does not concern you. Your interaction with him is delimited to the specific technical field. Now, when you find a person that you cannot delimit, and the person as a whole is unbrokenly evil, and you could take certain religious figures and certain presidential figures, let me say, and not so far back, as examples of that, then you can't. You can't deal cordially with them because they are solid, horrible from one end to the other. But not most people are. Most people are not like that. There's another important thing about mixed people to remember, that they do not necessarily understand what the meaning is of what they say. Now, if you study philosophy, you see that what they're advocating in their false views is destruction, disaster, the end of the world. But most of them have no such idea. They think that philosophy is just words. They're interested in specific concretes. They're mad at, let's say, AT&T. And so they say capitalism should be abolished and a government should be instituted to preserve justice. But they don't have any idea, most of them, what that actually means, and they wouldn't want it. So you have to say they're irresponsible for making statements like that. But on the other hand, you are not dealing with a, quote, horrible person. I think a good example of this, I'll take myself. When I first met Ayn Rand, I was surprised, not so much at what she viewed, as about how emotional she got. For instance, that disagree with Kant. And I can understand, you know, you're thinking he's really wrong, but why is that such a... I didn't know about philosophy, but why is that so intense, emotional an issue? And then she told me what she concretely saw in Kant and in his ideas. And she saw it as literally a statement of what would become of her life, her husband, her world, everything that she specifically and concretely wanted. And from that point of view, she reacted the way the ordinary person would react if everything that they valued were smashed or someone was advocating that. But they don't see it, most people, and so they don't get upset by it. So by the same token, now you don't have to get upset with people who don't really know what they are talking about. You can get annoyed. You can decide not to talk to them. But they are not as horrible as the things they say in most cases. I have a question concerning your college performance. What kind of grades did you get? Well, I got, with one exception, all A's. But many of them was after I got incompletes and then turned into an A, because it was hard to get anything in, hard for me to get anything in on time. But I did get one C in my 10 years of graduate school. And that was in a psychology course where I was asked to, half of the exam was factual, and half you were asked to present your own theory of emotion. So I presented my own theory, and he marked the whole paper C. And I went to complain, and he said, yes, it's supposed to be your own theory, but yours is out of line. Those are the exact words. And I said, I didn't know there was a line you were supposed to follow. He wouldn't talk about it. So I went to the dean, and I said, I would like him to take any paper that he gave an A to and mine and let the faculty member decide whether there's what the difference in grade is between the two. But no one in the department would come near it. So the dean said to me, you're a philosopher, so just take it philosophically. And I said, I don't equate philosophy with stoicism. So it got me nowhere, but at least I protested it. What do you think of long-distance relationships? Is there any point at which it would be more rational to break up, even if the two people still love each other? Well, there's so many questions that I'd have to know the answer to decide. How many times are you together? For how long? How often? Do you see her once a year? Once every 2 months? For how long? A day? A week? A month? Is it avoidable? Could one of you alter the circumstances? Is this permanent for life? Or is this, you know, while one of you is finishing a degree or whichever? But the most important thing of all is, can you get the essentials of what you need from an exclusive life relationship in this situation? Do you get what you need? Or is it in part an escape from the fact that you don't think you'll find anything better, or the fact that you're indecisive and she's here? But if you can go over what you want and say, yes, we have enough communication. For instance, we have phone, email, Skype, there's even phone sex, camera sex. You have to add it all up and say, does that satisfy what you want in life? And if it doesn't, then obviously you got to try somewhere else. If it does, then go for it. If you've made a mistake, you can get divorced long range across the country, just as you can if you live in the same house. A past podcast on this one, so I'll be brief. Was Dagny in love with Francisco and Reardon at the time when she was with them and after she was with Galt? No. Now, as stated in the novel, she held them to be great, superlative values, her personal values, her admiration, but she was not the total of what she was looking for. And she said that several times in the novel. Love for Ayn Rand means the irreplaceable, that which when you found, nothing else can take its place, nothing else to you can be preferable. And she knew that she was looking for something more. And then the questioner continues, Dagny decides to leave Francisco after knowing he has become a playboy. Then why doesn't she accept him back after knowing what he was really doing? The answer is because she had met Galt, so the whole situation was different. And then this question, the last one, why doesn't she choose to be with all three men in the end? Because we don't believe in group marriage. In this case, polyandry. I've covered that in the past, why it is not proper to have a marriage involving, a marriage or a relationship involving three men and one woman, or three women and one man, or two for that matter. And if you say, oh, but what if all three you love equally? My answer is it can never be equal, because individuals are so unique. So that's why she chooses one, the one she really wants. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most famous novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Thanks for listening.